On February 18th, SFU's Morris J. Wass Center for Dialogue presented Silawat Cloche with the Jack P. Blaney Award for Dialogue in recognition of her outstanding global leadership using dialogue in her work as an advocate for indigenous, environmental, and cultural rights. Shauna Sylvester, the executive director of the center, says Sila's quiet determination has moved thousands from global leaders to young climate advocates. She is an educator, dialogue innovator, and elder who has helped us understand the experiences of the Arctic and learn about what this means for our shared future. Wat Cloche previously held the role of Canadian president of the Inuit Circumpolar Council, later to become the international chair, where she worked extensively to open space for dialogue that welcomes and invites the voices of Indigenous peoples. Wat Cloche's dialogue approach brings in Indigenous storytelling as an empathy-driven connector between the minds and hearts of those she works with. Wat Cloche is the author of the memoir The Right to be Cold, a chronicle of Canada's North, detailing the devastating impact of climate change on Inuit communities. We invited Silawat Cloche to join us for a conversation that matters about the changes she has witnessed in the Arctic.
Conversations That Matter is a partner program of the Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the following and viewers like you. Please become a patron at conversationsthatmatter.tv.
Welcome to Conversations That Matter.
Thank you.
And congratulations on being awarded the Blaney Prize at the Center for Dialogue at SFU. What does the receiving this award mean to you?
Well, I think it holds a quite a bit, actually. Not to say that I think I've had enough recognition over the years, but everyone is special.
Yes.
Each one is special, and they're very timely in that kind of recognition. And it's never, I never see it as me getting the recognition.
Right.
But it's more about people getting it, the message that I've always been trying to relay over the years, the many years. And so for me, it's resonance of truth, and that's what matters to me. So the meaning at this time is that, you know, a lifelong journey of almost 20 years of trying to signal to the world in the style and approach that I've always used, and that is building partnerships, building bridges, and trying to get the Arctic to put on the map, the Arctic and its people, in a world that barely knows who we are, much less the negative impacts globalization is having on our way of life. And so it's meaningful, and it seems to fit who I am.
Yes.
And how I've been able to try to bring people together to understand these pieces that all belong to us.
Well, it matters to me that the award and also the Center for Dialogue, because I think that it is through dialogue and you know, that is a willingness to share and also a willingness to listen that allows people to exchange ideas and hopefully then move us towards what would be much closer to the truth.
Right.
Too often we watch people who become entrenched in one particular value or concept and then not share. And in something that's so sensitive as the changing nature of the environment, especially in the Arctic, if you don't have that dialogue, it's really easy for people to get locked into a thought or an idea that they have about what they believe to be true.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And the Arctic is a place, and I say this in all the talks that I give. What happens in the Arctic doesn't stay in the Arctic. It impacts everywhere else in the world, and it's sad to say that now that other people are going through their emergent states of emergencies, as we have for decades now, are starting to realize that Arctic connection. So my work, you know, it's been ongoing 20 years, but it's now becoming even more relevant because people are wanting to hear the Arctic story from the human perspective.
So I've only been to the Arctic once in my life,
right.
And it was in the summer, so I don't really get a sense. And because I don't have the history of having been there, and I was only in one city, so I didn't get a chance to tour around. As you point out, how do I meet somebody, especially in the metropolis of Vancouver, who has lived in the Arctic and say, tell me what it's really like? And so what are those changes? What is mm-hmm. life really like in the Arctic, and how mm-hmm. are we seeing it impacted by the changes mm-hmm. That are happening globally?
Mm-hmm. There are many. We live in Alaska, in Greenland, in Canada, and Russia. We're about 165,000 people at the top of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And if the map were made different, you would know that we're really close to one another.
Yeah, and right? Interconnected.
Interconnected.
Yes.
But we can't go to each other's countries without flying many, many, many hours, because there are no airline routes that take us to each other.
Right.
So, you know, we have lived there for millennia, and this is our world. We're still a hunting, fishing, gathering people. Mm-hmm. We rely on the cold, the ice, and the snow, not just to survive, but to actually thrive in mm-hmm. the cold.
You know, for some people that sounds antithetical. They go, but that's too cold.
No.
but in your book, you're right to be cold.
Yeah, everything thrives.
Yeah.
Including us humans and our wildlife. We depend on that snow for transportation mobility.
Mm-hmm.
That's our highways to go and get our organic food that we bring back. It's very highly nutritious, and food that keeps us warm in that cold. Yeah, as I say, it's not Lipton cup of soup that's going to keep you warm in minus 50. It's going to be seal meat and whale and fish and caribou and all of those wonderful things. And so for us now, having to deal with, but you have to go back a little bit to the historical context.
Yes.
And I talk about that because the first wave of tumultuous change started to occur long ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the historical traumas that were inflicted upon our people in the Arctic, whether it's forced relocations into the high Arctic, the dog slaughters,
mm-hmm.
Children sent away very early. I was one of them at the age of 10 to residential schools and mm-hmm. so on. All of those changes, abuses that were happening,
mm-hmm.
were something that really just took us out of our center.
Right.
And it changed our DNA. You know, here we were, you know, a people that were extremely ingenious. We are the inventors of the kayak, the mm-hmm. boat, replicated worldwide.
Yeah.
We are the people who can build a home of snow,
mm-hmm.
warm enough for your babies to be birthed in. This is ingenuity. This is the best architecture. So we're not just people who just, you know, have no sense of direction or no sense of wisdom. Of course, not at all. It's the opposite. We're people who've had to rely
yeah.
on everything.
As you're saying that, I realized that when Shackleton went to the South Pole, the only way that he was able to do so is because he had spent, what was it, a year and a half?
Something like that.
In the high Arctic and learned from the people whom, well, in essence, saved him and his crew, because otherwise they would not have survived.
Right.
And what did they know? They knew how to survive in that environment. And so it takes a depth of understanding and experience and ingenuity to be able to survive in that kind of weather.
And there are many explorers who didn't at their peril.
That's
they didn't listen to Inuit. That's what their peril. They died.
Yeah.
But going back to the remarkable way in which we teach our children and the power of the Inuit hunt, it's not just about the technical aspect of learning how to become a great provider and a mm-hmm. great hunter, but the character building that happens on that land and on that ice is key,
mm-hmm.
you know, to how to be bold under pressure, how to withstand stressful situations, how to not be impulsive
mm-hmm.
on the land, because that kills if you're impulsive and reflective. And, and really, ultimately, it's about developing sound judgment for our kids and wisdom. That's
mm-hmm.
the hallmark of Inuit culture, is that. So you can say that the ice is our university in many ways. And so
and probably a pretty harsh teacher. If you're not listening.
That's right.
Yeah.
You're gone.
Yeah.
You're a goner. And so here we are in that place, you know, trying to understand these pieces of our historical context, why we've come from such a very independent, ingenious way of life
mm-hmm.
to now being so highly dependent on substances, processes, institutions. What happened along the way?
Well, and artificial housing as well.
Oh, artificial housing that brought on, you know, health problems of all kinds with no running water
mm-hmm.
in those days. When I was growing up, I didn't have any until I was 20.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that was happening. And then we started to get a good handle on recognizing what happened in our world about 10, 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought, you know, not only do we need to understand these pieces to move beyond and heal, But we need to also find ways in which we can ground ourselves back
right.
to this place.
Mm-hmm.
And we realize it's our culture. It's right there. The remarkable way in which we can prepare our children for the opportunities and challenges of life.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it's not about either or, you know, going into
right.
way back in the days of being Inuk, but being the Inuk of today.
Yes.
But reaching for those remarkable learning skills and character building skills right there in front of us. And as we went the other side and realized this is it, this
mm-hmm.
is what we want to develop, we realize our climate is changing so quickly, and it's starting to minimize that traditional knowledge
mm-hmm.
in ways that are happening really fast.
Can you give me an example of how that is impacting being able to embrace what would be a traditional bit of knowledge and way of life
mm-hmm.
that is now being impacted by the changes in the environment?
Mm-hmm. Well, our elders and hunters will say, they will still teach, of course, we all still teach our children, for
mm-hmm.
sure. But our elders now say, this is what I'm teaching you about being a survivor on the land
mm-hmm.
and being able to come back and provide for your family, because that's what it's really all about.
Yes.
And what you're learning on, you know, how to read the conditions of weather, the ice conditions. But it's just remarkable, like what our hunters can read and know. And so when all of that, when climate change starts to happen, you know, it becomes unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
We never know now when the ice will form. I left my hometown of Kudjuk just a couple of weeks ago, and we're February, and the front part of the river was still not frozen. The front part.
Huh.
And that's been happening 2 years in a row.
I just got an email from somebody from Sweden said, look, it's plus 10 degrees right now.
Yeah.
It's not supposed to be.
Yeah.
This was just in mm-hmm. the last couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is what you're saying is
yeah.
the same where you
oh,
are.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
The changes are great. We have a coastal erosion, and particularly in Alaska where we Inuit live, because it's open coast all there,
mm-hmm.
is hit harder than the three other countries where we live. Although the western part of Canada also in the Beaufort Sea area are very impacted by coastal erosion as well.
Mm-hmm.
You see, if you Google some of those communities in Alaska, Nutok, Kevalina, Shishmaref,
mm-hmm.
there's homes already in the sea. Because
right.
They fell into the sea because the coast has eroded so much.
My gosh.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And there's a documentary on that I don't know if it was ABC or NBC that did that
mm-hmm.
years back. But you can see that's happening. There are many communities in Alaska that need relocating now as a result of what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
We have permafrost that is melting very quickly everywhere.
Yes,
and
I was talking.
Homes that are buckling
yeah.
and having to be relocated. We have runways that are buckling. Our planes have
yes.
to come in. We have no other route.
And that's because the permafrost beneath it is
yes,
melting.
That's right. We have insects and birds that are making their way up north that we don't even have a name for sometimes.
Because they're new to the region.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So all of those things are happening.
Yeah. I was talking to one fellow that I know who worked in the construction and the laying of fiber optic cable to try
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
deliver internet service into the far north. And he was talking about the challenges that come with this changing permafrost.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, no matter what anybody tells you, until you've been there,
yeah.
you know, when
yeah.
you're there, you start to say, well, you can have all the theories that you want, but I'm looking around and I'm going,
this is
reality. Is changing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so.
And so with that melting permafrost, of mm-hmm. course, there is a release of methane.
That's right.
And so,
which is even worse than CO2.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, as a pure gas, methane
yeah.
is,
yeah.
I think, 118 times more potent as a
yeah.
greenhouse gas
yeah.
than CO2.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
and
it has a shorter half-life, I think,
yeah.
9.1 years or something like
yeah.
that before it starts to change. But even after 100 years, it's still more potent
yes,
than
it
CO2.
Is. It is.
Yeah.
And the other factor here is also, because in the work that I've done in the past, was the toxins issue that ended up in our food chain and the nursing milk of our mothers in much bigger
mm-hmm.
numbers than anywhere else in the world. We became the net recipients of these persistent organic pollutants. So the POPS treaty work, you know, the toxins.
Yes.
Well, the toxins that are byproduct of industry and pesticides and so on, they make their way up into the Arctic through the weather patterns.
Mm-hmm.
Deposit, they go back up. Deposit, they go back up. Deposit. But when they get to the Arctic, where it's too cold and the Arctic sink, well, for now they're dormant in there, right? But when the warming starts to happen even more, there will be a re-release.
Okay, you're
toxins.
Telling me something that I don't know.
Okay.
Like, I have not heard this before.
Yeah, I've heard it many times from scientists.
I've got to do more reading about this. So there will be
a re-release. To think that we would go through a UN treaty, ban these substances at their source, and that they would re-release and show themselves again because of the warming climate.
You know, you were talking about culture, way of life, and so on. And I was also reading that you talked about a neighbor of yours who was a very skilled hunter, knew his way around the Arctic incredibly well.
Mm-hmm.
And one day he didn't come home.
He was alone when he went out hunting.
But that probably wasn't unusual for him to do
because
he was so skilled, right?
Absolutely. And a very seasoned hunter, you know, almost elder age.
Yeah.
And off he went. And he got lost, and he fell through the thinning ice. He was out there by himself, and he had buried himself in the snow to try to protect himself until help came. And he was found, and he lost both his legs. They froze.
Wow.
And so I watched him as my neighbor across the street in Iqaluit, where I was living for almost 20 years, which is even further north from my hometown where I am now living back in.
Right.
And to see him go from that place where, you know, he was getting used to the, what are they called?
Prosthetics.
Yeah, prosthetics.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To just within the next 2, 3, 4 years be back on and hunting again, you know? It's just an amazing story of
survival.
That's
remarkable.
But also one that is committed to his way of life, his culture.
Mm-hmm.
That's who he is.
And so that's direct impact on individuals, but we also see that there's a direct impact upon animal populations there as well. When we see these changing conditions, how do those play themselves out?
Well, I mean, the world tends to want to just focus on our wildlife, you know?
Yes.
The heartstrings, polar bears,
right.
You know, all the cuddly, furry animals that need to be saved and so on.
But this is the interconnection of life.
Yes, but there's a real history, though, to this animal rights movement that has wanted so much to save our... is a very misguided way that really demolished our own sealing industry, not industry, but the subsistence of our hunt, the byproduct of the subsistence of our hunt. We were able to make a good living back in the 60s until the animal rights movement, including Brigitte Bardot, came over and just with a broad stroke took away our little economy that we had going. But getting back to your initial question again, you said...
Yeah, I didn't actually bring up polar bears. I was talking about the relationship between the changing environment
and
the impact that it has on the entire animal kingdom that lives within
that environment.
Well, yes,
of course it does. It does. And, and I know that because the polar bear issue always comes up.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants to save the polar bear. But as we speak, they're thriving right now.
So I've heard,
yes.
But sometimes I'm not sure where the truth is.
I mean, we're not making it up.
Yeah.
If you go to...
good. It's happy to hear that they're thriving.
In Nunavut and some other areas, you know, they are. So, but we don't know what the future holds, of course.
Right.
And so, but I won't go there right now. But yes, I mean, everything, as I say, The colder it is, the better off we all are in the Arctic.
But because that's the environment that they learn to function and survive in
as well. And thrive.
Yeah.
And thrive.
So coming full circle in our conversation, because we're just about out of time here, we talk about the need for dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
When you speak to people about what is happening, what is it that you're hoping they can take away with them?
Mm-hmm.
And how would you like to see them move us towards action that will make a difference?
Yeah. They are learning things that they never quite heard it that way before. You know, the idea that the ICE is our university, and the idea that we holistically teach our kids the character skills and life skills, which are so transferable to the modern world.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the fact that we have the highest suicide rates in North America is extremely telling of how our social and health indicators have not improved, even if we've had institutions of health systems in place. Something's not working there.
Yes.
And so we have to readdress and look at these issues very deeply. And so for them to understand that when I say impulsivity is one of the things that we've discovered is a factor in young kids taking their lives. Suicide can be a very impulsive act.
Yes.
But it's not to say that you're not in a dark place and need coping mechanisms and help and healing to get out of those dark places. However, it really is about addressing these issues from that very human perspective and realizing that culture and language and all of those things out on the land are really part of that solution to addressing that. And if you haven't learned those kind of skills like how not to be impulsive on the land, or let's put it this way, if you've learned how to be not impulsive on the land because you knew that impulsivity put you and your family at risk, then you are probably more apt, if you've integrated that culturally, to have the strength when stressors come in the modern world to be able to say, I'm going to get through this.
And this comes back to your point about how strong and how important it is to be connected to one's culture.
Absolutely.
Around sense of self,
absolutely.
Confidence,
yes.
Skill set.
Yes.
All of these things are fundamentally important.
They are. They are. And I will speak to some of that today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you've touched on an issue that really, really disturbs me, that when we see people who are separated from their culture.
Yeah.
They start to lose a sense of a meaning of life.
Yeah.
And it's all interconnected.
Self-worth.
Yeah.
All of that is gone through all of that oppression and suppression that we've been through.
Yeah.
So standing up for your rights is a healthy sign. And
certainly
this country has been doing that this week.
And you are doing a great job of it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much
Thank
for coming in and sharing this.
Thanks. Thank you.